This is Brock and Salk.
I'm talking to Salk and I'm getting all freaked out.
Salk, the third time in 2 days is flat out wrong.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Hey, you kind of drank my milkshake there.
I think Baldwin's really a number three.
Could you be any more contemptuous, by the way? Salk, look at him.
Well, you don't want zero. DK Metcalf.
No. I don't want him.
He will not succeed as a big-time player in the NFL. I don't want him for 1 second.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Brock, you're an ex-player. Salk, you just... Things happen in your life.
Hello. Hello, everybody. It's another Brock and Salk podcast.
Get what you want.
Wow. Talk about hubris.
The last time I say anything to Howdy ever again. Sorry, Howdy.
I talked to our guy.
Yeah.
And I just said, hey, can you put some more Salk in there?
Yeah.
He was like, okay, sure.
He's like, this is all we got.
Since you want to tell me how to do my job, go, I'll take care of it.
The golden rule, Mike. The man with the gold makes the rules. And Howdy makes the rules.
I don't remember that last cup.
I don't remember almost
Phil
any
Sims?
Of that.
I think it was Phil Sims.
Yeah.
Was it Phil
Sims? That's definitely Phil Sims.
I remember the DK stuff, because thank you for cutting me out. I was like, I don't want him either.
I don't think any of that really happened.
What did Phil say there at the end of that, Howdy? I couldn't quite catch it.
I have to look.
That DK stuff sounds like sort of vocally processed. I don't think that was me.
In our defense, that was talking about him in the first round.
Right.
We were like, oh, that's too much of a risk. He's all brawn.
Well, you put him end of the second round.
What a mistake that would have been.
Yeah.
Totally different.
Brock, you're an ex-player. Salk, you just... Things happen in your life.
Salky, I don't really know what to say to you, but you always ask me questions about Phil McConkey and Mark Bavaro, so I'll keep coming on the show. All right.
Things happen in your life.
Thanks, Howdy. I'm so glad you're around. That was really nice of you to put all that together.
Yeah,
I like that open a lot better. I do. Trying to remember why Graz was so pissed at you, too.
I was being cantankerous, it sounds
contemptuous.
Like. Contemptuous. I don't know why.
What was that about, Howdy?
Who knows?
No. You were adamant about something, and he was.
Oh, it was flat out wrong.
A long time ago in the Bob and Graz show, probably 2012.
Oh, so it's way back.
Yeah.
So you're talking before that's Brock and Salk 1.
Yeah, and they asked a question. Oh, your old producer Colin asked a question. Who would you rather take a punch from, the two oldest guys at the station or Mike? And then Bob's answered, oh, Salk.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous.
He's a little guy. And then Graz was just so excited about the contempt in his voice when he was talking about
So he's not even talking about me. He's talking to Bob and saying Bob is showing contempt. Oh, well, that's fine. Oh, I thought I was being contemptuous. Bob can show all the contempt for me he wants, certainly in 2012. But I wasn't being contemptuous.
Right.
Oh, all right.
No, you were just flat out wrong.
Salk, you just...
Just gotta let that hang out there forever. All right.
Things happen in your life.
Thank you, Phil. All right. It's a bit of a big pregnant pause from Phil there. All right. Okay. All right. Can we just talk about Seahawks or something, please? I'm done with this for today.
Can we just play that opening in
No!
That's great.
No, that's enough. That is enough. That is more than
you
enough.
You wanted more Salk. You thought there was no Salk in the previous open, so you get all Salk right there. I'm good with it. That's Salky.
I guess I didn't want that much Salk.
Okay.
I guess that's more Salk. That wasn't the type of Salk I wanted.
Next week, we'll get the name back in your mouth drop and the trouble with the Mariners record. Scott had to help you out.
We did that last week while you were gone. You missed that last week. I was sort of hoping maybe for more of my better moments, but maybe those haven't been cut.
You can't ask me to do things that don't exist.
Right. I was saying, maybe those just weren't cut.
Hey, Mike, I got some lines for you. If you could cut these in the studio... What was the other one? Doug Baldwin's a number three receiver.
Yeah, he's called Doug Baldwin a number three. Yeah. That was one of his ceiling.
He was a number three. Mm-hmm. Still, he always was a number three receiver.
Slot.
He's a slot guy. It's what he was. I will always correct about that. Till the day I die, I'll take that one with me to the grave. Anyway, Brock, hi.
Yes, Michael.
It's nice
to
be with you again today and talking some off-season football. The off-season is officially underway coming off the Super Bowl. Did you enjoy the Super Bowl?
We did. I, as you know, and you know me for a long time, I've not told you this story yet during your daily morning show. We've got a lot of other things to tackle. But Titus's baseball team did a fundraiser. And have you ever done, either of you, any of you, done the squares game?
Oh, yeah.
Where, have you done that, Salk, where you pay for squares?
Don't and, get
I,
him
I have, and in fact, I said the squares guy was one of the five people that's most annoying at your Super Bowl party.
And who was number one?
I forget now. Who was number one? Oh, it was Brock.
It was Brock Heward.
Brock Heward was number
Whoa.
One.
The five worst people to watch a football game with, Brock and you said number one was Brock.
Brock Heward, number one.
We'll have to address that.
Well, hold on. Are you disagreeing with me?
Wow.
I mean... Was he number one?
Kyle Brown, are you disagreeing with me?
Oh, interesting. You're telling me you haven't had the time of your life up in the suite when we're watching a game, and I'm telling you...
No, he's talking
on.
If you have the remote control.
Yes.
Oh.
I'm talking when Brock Heward gets control of the DVR watching a live game.
I see.
Number one worst person to have at your Super Bowl party.
I wouldn't say number one worst. I think there's others. I think Larry the Skunk would be worse. I think there's others.
Phil the Skunk.
But
kind of turd in the punch bowl.
Yes.
Indeed, to be his sobriquet.
But yeah, okay, fine. I could see where I'm on that list. Well, then I'd be 1 in 5 on your list because this is the first time I've ever done this.
Squares guy. Did you buy your squares? Got to get your squares. Squares. Did you buy your squares? Squares.
So wake up Sunday, kind of excited to see what my numbers were. I was a 2. I was a 5. I was an 8. I'm like, those suck. But then I had a...
They're all the same.
No.
No, then you want football scores.
Then I had a 0 and I had a 3.
Oh, you won twice then.
And I was like, ooh, I got a chance here.
Was it only for the end of the game or for each quarter?
Each quarter.
Yeah, okay.
Each quarter.
So it was what, 13-10 half and 23-20 final? Did you win twice?
I sure did.
Wow.
Sure did. And I think
congratulations, you beat a bunch of, 12-year-old boys.
No. A lot of coaches, a lot of family friends. It took a lot of people to fill up 100 squares. Right. So, yeah. Yeah, pretty darn excited about that. So I never, honestly, this sounds really strange to maybe some who spend their life fantasy football, never done that. Gambling, never done that. And this is the first time in 45 years of my life where I watched a game with another motive, with another, there's a whole other thing going on here. Like,
how was
another rooting interest?
Molly turned to me and said, this is why you will never gamble.
Right.
It'd be awful. Life. You are the worst. Like, this is, you're just your makeup and your personality, and you're just going crazy. Like, no, we're never doing this again. So, probably a 1 and done. Maybe I'll just go out on top. Winning twice out of 4.
Super Bowl squares is too much.
You and Sean McVay, you'll both be 1 and done.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Stafford.
You don't think he's done?
I don't think McVay's done. No.
You think, maybe he's trying to do a little bit of negotiating to get some more money?
Kind of helps. I saw Zach Taylor, the coach at Cincy, just got a 5-year extension.
I'll tell you what, man. If I'm Sean McVay and I know that Tony Romo is getting paid twice as much money every Sunday as I am, you it's just not going to fly. Like, I couldn't handle that.
Yep.
You're and telling Romo's me doing like 3 hours of work a week outside of
max,
the game?
No.
Maybe that's the
outside
game.
The game.
Well, I mean, he's maybe looking at something on a flight.
He's going to show up at some meetings.
Well, he's got some meetings.
Yeah.
I don't know if the 3 hours is being spent in research, but okay, he shows up to a couple of meetings leading up to the game, spends the rest of the week playing golf, and makes double the money Sean McVay does for working 24/7, 365. Are you kidding me?
Yep.
If you tell me that with Amazon coming into that business and everything else, if I'm Sean McVay and I'm making, I think it's 8.5 he makes now, somebody's going to offer me $17 million a year to go do that, I'm sure having that conversation.
Yeah, probably that's fair. I think that that's a...
My money to do no work while I'm about to have a family? Sold. Yep.
But you spend years trying to rid yourself of Jared Goff and you finally get it through. Are you like,
Well, you know you only
Thanks,
got one
Les
more year
Snead,
Stafford,
I'm out.
Right? You got one more year of Stafford, and then you got to rebuild this thing, and then what's your career?
Yeah, one more year with Stafford.
Before he graduates and goes directly into the Hall of Fame.
What's to stop him from the Drew Brees deal? He signed it and kept playing. Hey, McVay, after next year,
right?
Then I'm going.
Okay, so he does one more year, and
one
then
more
see
year
you
with
later.
Stafford, and
I could see that happening. So, right.
Romo just screwed everything up. CBS, what are you doing? Actually, I had dinner with my agent down in L.A., and we were chatting about that. Like, what in the world? If they could go back, because that is sound. The relationship with Nance, don't let that fool you, that they can characterize it one way on air, but that's not a healthy deal. It certainly has made Aikman's negotiation, and is Aikman really going to consider going to Amazon? Is he really going to want to do that for the worst game on a Thursday night after doing what he's done the last, what, two decades?
He was mad when he didn't even have the best playoff game.
Yep. So I don't know if that's happening. But, yeah, man, Romo screwed all that up for all of it.
CBS screwed it up.
Yeah, CBS did. Romo did nothing wrong. Romo leveraged Monday Night Football and got CBS to pay him $1 million a game, which is truly just asinine. But anyhow, besides all of that, back to your original question, did I enjoy the game? Very much so.
I thought it was an okay game. Honestly, I did not think that was a great game. It was a good game, not a great game. And I'll admit to being sour. I mean,
you're just a sourpuss going into it, the whole thing. Like, you've had a tough two and a half
really
weeks.
Hard yes. playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've had a
have you gotten
hard
gray?
Playoffs.
Have you got some gray now? Do you get a little gray in your chin or in your sideburns?
I certainly get, yes.
You're getting some gray.
Yes.
Because the last few weeks, you just got you a little gray. Got you a little blue about everything you thought about football, and then it got you a little gray. Just
blue and
irritated.
Gray. You are 90 Seahawks. You're just blue and gray.
Can we talk together as a group? Can we?
Yes.
Can the four of us just together talk for a little bit? Howdy, stop giggling. Stop lying and wait for me. I'm going to be vulnerable for a little while. Can you turn
the podcast off and do that?
Yeah.
Could you stop recording?
Are you wearing your cotton white underwear right now?
What?
In the trust tree, ooh. You know, like in the trust tree.
Something really cool. I don't even know about
cotton white.
Can you not record? Don't like make cuts here to like, you know, shove into my face later, like Phil Sims or whatever. Can we all just hang out together? I just need some help.
Let your guard down, Mike.
So podcasts are for. One talking podcast?
These last 2 months of playoff football have been the worst sports experience of my life. I've never been more bummed out watching sports than the last two, like, what is it, the last month and a half or whatever the playoffs have taken?
It wasn't just the playoffs.
No, it was mostly just the playoffs.
Spieth's collapse. And
that's true.
That was a tough Sunday for you.
That didn't help.
You texted me that you hate sports.
That was the Sunday, right? wasn't that the Sunday in between?
Yes.
Literally every single Sunday for, like, as far back now as I can remember has been ruined by sports for me. It's been terrible. I need to get back to my house. I'm living in this small apartment while we're doing some work on our house.
Yeah.
It's taking a little longer than expected. And it just, you know, the couch is uncomfortable. Everything's bad. And it's getting worse.
And like, you can't be in the basement. You don't have your basement.
Well, the whole apartment's a basement.
Right.
Not a lot of natural light in there.
There's no natural. You can't open the windows. Heather and I were doing some Tabata workout last night. You ever done Tabata? Do you know what that is?
Ciabatta bread?
Yeah, Ciabatta workout.
Is he like a lefty masher for the Milwaukee Brewers?
Tabata workout is like the high-intensity training thing, right? Where it's like 30 seconds on,
burpees,
15 seconds
squats,
off.
Planks,
this was all direct because we're going to go skiing. So this is all like glutes and like upper legs, right? So we're doing all that. And I'm as you can imagine, dripping with sweat. There's no ventilation whatsoever in this basement apartment, and Wendell's no more than 10 feet away just farting constantly.
No,
can you imagine working out like that in the midst of a cloud of dog fart?
Nope. Get him out of there.
As bad as that was, I mean, it smells like rotting.
Is this the vulnerable part, or is this where you're being vulnerable?
I'll get back to the vulnerability. It's like smells like rotting rotisserie chicken, and it won't dissipate because there's no.
Okay, can we move on?
And all of that,
goodness gracious,
and all of that was better than watching the playoffs this year. Like, it was so sad for me.
Yeah.
I hated it.
So the first week was all wild card, were all blowouts.
That was just bad games.
One decent game, Bengals Raiders, kind of a decent game. All the rest just blowout city. So non-competitive, like,
right.
The whole country was with you, Saul. Whole country's like, it's bad. I'm glad we expanded the playoffs for just blowout after blowout. Horrible. And then the next weekend, it's four incredible games down to the final possession, down to the final second. And yet there was Salky. rest of the country celebrating incredible divisional weekend after wild card poo. Basically, Wendell farts the wild card weekend, and then we come back to the most, honestly, Saturday and Sunday, four of the most incredible, last second, down to the wire. Are you kidding me?
I was racked with just miserable anger and a mug. I just hate all the teams that were winning. Yep. I hate the way they're winning.
I
hate that anything I've ever said about football has been proven wrong in the last 3 weeks. I mean, like, I don't even know why. I can't even keep doing this. Everything I believe about football is now wrong. All because of, like, freak weird plays back and forth. Like, now Matt Stafford's being talked about as a Hall of Famer, and people are on this whole let's go all in thing. The dude literally threw the game-losing pick, and Jaquaski Tartt has hands of gold, and so he drops the darn thing. I mean, like, that guy tried everything in his power to get the Rams the best roster in the NFL out of the playoffs. It didn't work. No. He now is getting credited with all of the playoff wins that he didn't have before, and it's a total joke show because a couple of guys can't catch, and Bruce Arians doesn't know how to communicate a defense. Nice job, boys. Real good. Gosh, if I ever have like some sort of a renewal of my vows with Heather, which I don't know why I would need to do that, but if for some reason I did, I'm not inviting Jaquaski Tartt or Bruce Arians. How's that?
Okay. So,
or Matt Stafford or Josh Allen.
When are you going to be vulnerable? Because I'm just hearing irascible. Been. I'm just hearing irascible.
Oh.
Contemptuous, even.
No, I think I was just... I thought I was just vulnerable. I feel like everything I said...
Well, I feel like everything you just said is what I've heard for...
He's been miserable for 2 months.
I just said everything I've ever said about the NFL was proven wrong in the span of a month.
All right.
Well, he admitted he was wrong about Rashad Penny. He admitted all these things.
DK Metcalf, first rounder. Oh, okay, let's dig into this then a little bit. Let's dig into the vulnerable.
Please do.
Okay, get back to the more vulnerable side.
Start taping again, Howdy.
I like that softer side of you that said... I'm really fearful that everything I believed about the NFL is wrong.
Yes.
And over.
Yes.
Are you really? Do you really think it's over? Do you really think it's changed? Do you really think that Matthew Stafford next year is going to win another Super Bowl? Do you really?
You know what? I'm afraid to say no, because every time, like, I feel like if I say that won't happen again, it will. I do think there were some changes made in the NFL this year. You and I have talked a little bit about the whole wide receiver thing. This was the year of the wide receiver in a lot of ways. And for how long did we say, well, all right, these number one wide receivers are cool. You spend a lot of money. They help you get some yards, but they don't win Super Bowls.
Right.
Well, that's not true anymore.
Nope.
Like, no, it's not. You want to win, you better have yourself a premier wide receiver.
And you better not just be a lineup in one spot wide receiver.
Well,
you better be a physical menace of a wide receiver.
So I was talking to Bump about that because you made that point the other day. I thought it was a good one. And Michael Bumpus has told me before, and this isn't like a huge surprise, that the problem with being a wide receiver is that you're so dependent on everybody else, right, to do their job before you can do yours. It does feel like some of these smarter coaches in the NFL who are being creative and trying to problem solve said, all right, hold on. Some of the best athletes in our game play this position that right now is dependent on 8 other guys in order for them to do anything. Why are we allowing that to happen? It's 4th and 1. The Super Bowl is on the line. Just hand the darn guy the ball.
Correct.
And they did. And it worked. Mm-hmm.
Sure did.
Like, I'm not going to wait and hope that the offensive line pass blocks well and that Matthew Stafford recognizes the right guy to throw to and that he throws it accurately. Why am I going to wait on all those things? Just hand the guy the ball.
Yep.
And he did, and it worked.
Yep.
And it's the same thing the Niners did against Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
This Deebo Samuel's our best player by leaps and bounds. Just hand him the ball on 3rd and 7 rather than relying on Jimmy Garoppolo to try to hump it up to him. And that's guess what? It worked. He rumbles for 8 yards, not breaks like 12 tackles on the play. It was like his own beastquake, for God's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would say that is a gestalt change in the way the NFL's being played.
Yeah, I'd say one thing, too, where it has not changed. This, I think, goes back to one of your core principles, one of the things that you believe certainly has turned the most in 12 years with Pete Carroll from your day one relationship and interaction to 12 years later with him. And that is just your belief that culture matters, that team build matters. That,
really? Because the Bengals are in the Super Bowl.
Well,
they have the second or third worst owner in the NFL.
The Rams are a picture of that. The Rams are a picture of selflessness. The Rams, from Sean McVay down to Cooper Kupp to their best player, to their whole system, Mike, and the fact that Cooper Kupp was willing to do that, he's willing to block in every way that he needs to block. And as I said to you earlier in the week on Monday, I mean, OBJ is the poster child for their culture.
Yeah, but even that, like, OBJ is supposed to go in and ruin a team, and instead, he found the fountain of youth.
Because their culture was one of just incredible selflessness. The people buy in. It's buy-in, and culture matters. And Joe Burrow, Yeah, Cincinnati, and their owner is dirt cheap. His innovative daughter is not, by the way, who's played an integral role in shaping that roster and making them and taking them into the 21st century. And you know, when he is gone, she'll assume that role. And I think she's played a vital role and a progressive role in moving them forward. And Joe Burrow is the face of all of that and has elevated those people because of his nature. He, too, is an unbelievably high character, selfless, class act, didn't blame, didn't point fingers, gets sacked and doesn't whine. I mean, to me, that was watching the game. You asked 10, 20 minutes ago, did I enjoy it? I really did. And I think that was a huge aspect of it from both of those organizational standpoints.
Let me ask you more on the Sean McVay thing. How do you think he is able to build that kind of culture? Is it his, and I don't give me it's all of the above, is it his leadership? Is it his understanding of the X's and O's and his sort of intelligence that gets guys to sort of follow him? Like, what do you think he was able to do? Because he's a young guy. He took over the job at 32. Uh-huh. Which I think is generally a good thing. Like, if somebody has stood out and is able to break the mold like that, the Theo Epsteins, those types of guys, where they get hired, stop mm-hmm. making fun. There's probably a good reason why somebody would go after someone like that at that point. It doesn't mean that the other owners in the league all need to follow suit. Sean McVay's not good because he's in his 30s. Sean McVay is so good that he was able to succeed at an incredibly young age. That doesn't mean Kevin O'Connell and mm-hmm. are all going to succeed, but whatever, it's a side mm-hmm. note. What is it you think he did to be able to build
that? I think it is the same thing. Yeah, I think he has the same attribute that he praised Matthew Stafford on my Tuesday Seahawks Rams games. I've told you guys this before, that he says Matthew Stafford has the highest emotional intelligence of any player he's ever been around and can connect with anybody in any position group at any age in their entire organization.
I defy him to come in here and connect with me. I defy that to happen.
Okay. All right. Maybe you would be his kryptonite. Maybe you'd be his ultimate challenge. I think Sean McVay does the exact same thing. My life experience, I've done 4 of his games over the years. Every time, every one of them, you're just not going to find. There are guys just as good in our production meetings as Sean McVay. There are. And most of them are very, very good in this day and age. Most of them want to leverage a production meeting, college and professional, to tell their side of the story, to market their team, to tell their story. There may be some others as good as Sean McVay. There is nobody better at it. That's connecting with me, the analyst, connecting with the play-by-play, connecting with the reporter, connecting with the producer, connecting with everybody in that room to where we get done and everyone's like, that was unbelievable. Like, that guy is humble. He's smart. He tells you what's going on. He's the opposite of disingenuous. I mean, you sense that. And then look at all the people that he has hired.
So funny. I'm so suspicious of that. Like, you tell me all of those things, and it just makes me so suspicious.
Your cynicism just spikes to 1,000.
It does, and I feel terrible about that. But when you say that, like, that just raises my cynical, like,
okay,
really?
Well,
Is all of that true?
Then let me take it a step further and watch him communicate with his players and watch him communicate with Kevin Demoff, the president who I know and have known for 25 years since Kevin's dad represented me in the conversations that I've had with him. And one of the great things he is actually adaptable. And I think on both ends of the spectrum, and I know Pete is adamant about this, is an old guy. He hates being called old because he's, you know, frames himself as one of the most pliable, adaptable coaches there is and wants new ideas and brings in new people and listens to everybody and constantly challenges himself, right, through TED Talks over the years, through books, through speakers, through everything he tries to do to be as nimble as he can. And, you know, I think sometimes, obviously, they're portrayed up old, staunchy, stuck in his ways, yada, yada, yada. And there's maybe a debate for that, and we can talk about that later. Well, on the other side of it, it's like, okay, Sean McVay, young, hungry, smart, whippersnapper. I'm just this who I am. You know, and talking to Kevin and Les and others around there, like, no, he's open to change. Like, he knew in, you know, the Super Bowl they lost, he screwed that thing up. He was too hard. He grinded too much. He put too much pressure on himself and the people around him. He also knew, I can't stick with Jared Goff. and I got to be pliable, and we got to move off of him because we're not going to win a Super Bowl. Unlike his buddy Shanahan.
Get this guy out of my sight.
Unlike Shanahan. Hey, by the way, Shanahan thought, no, I can do it with Jimmy Dree. You know, we can do it. No, you can't.
Well,
nope, because on the biggest stage in the Super Bowl,
he could have if Jaquiski Tartt catches the ball.
There was still 9 minutes left in the game. There's still plenty of time for Jimmy G to throw a pick, which or a sack fumble, which he was probably going to do to lose the game.
Sack fumble.
That's exactly right. So, if you're asking me, your cynicism aside, what does that guy have at a young age? He has a connectability, and oh, by the way, the staff that he hires sure seems to understand what that looks like, what that feels like, what that sounds like, because Shane Waldron gets hired away, Brandon Staley gets hired away, Liam whatever at Kentucky gets hired away, Kevin O'Connell gets hired away, like everybody, his OC now is going to get hired in Miami, Thomas Brown, he gets hired away. So, I mean, not only has he done it right with and come in at a young age, but then he's had to hire and continue to hire. And if he sticks in that job, we'll have to hire a whole nother tree that may get plucked away because he knows what that should look and sound like.
So maybe the real story is, what is it about Sean McVay that makes all these guys want to go coach somewhere else?
Right.
Is he driving coaches out of the organization?
Yeah. Is Sean McVay the...
Is he hard to work with?
He's using people. Using them.
That sounds like maybe that's the next story that we should be talking about. All right, good points. The other thing that isn't supposed to work is you're not supposed to be able to build a super team.
Yep.
You're not supposed to be able to do what the Rams did here and just acquire all of that talent and have it work. I guess your answer will be sure, but... because Sean McVay is able to create that culture, that's the only reason that was able to work.
Mm-hmm.
So those two things are related.
Yep, I think that's an enormous part of it. But it was also and this is where, in a copycat league, not only did you see Kevin Connell hired and McDaniel hired and all these young whippersnappers, offensive gurus hired, Nathaniel Hackett, in a copycat league, I think this will be a fascinating offseason. And as that pertains to this team here in Seattle, something they have done already, right? Trading first-round picks for known commodities, Dwayne Brown, Jimmy Graham, Percy Harvin. But I think you are going to see many, many teams say, geesh, is it better to have a bird in hand in this known commodity than it is to project and evaluate and draft young talent?
So if that's where the market inefficiency is, should they be trading their proven commodities for first-round picks?
The Seahawks?
Yeah. Rather than copying, should they be trying to seize a shift in the market where all of a sudden everybody's going to stop valuing their first-round picks because it worked for the Rams and everyone wants proven commodities? Cool. Which one of mine do you want? I'll take your first-round pick if nobody wants him anymore, if we can get a better deal on him.
Who are you going to get first round?
Well, I don't know. That's a totally different matter. I don't know about all that.
Well, see,
There's no Richard Sherman. There's no Frank Clark. There's no Cam Chancellor.
DK Metcalf?
But if that's the way the league's going and they're less value, the Seahawks got 2 first-round picks for Rick Meyer back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be way less valued, and that's what you're saying they could go to.
Could. But who is your commodity? Bobby, I would not generate that at this time with his salary.
I don't think so either. But I mean, this argument is sort of predicated on the idea that maybe some of that worm turns. And if it does, are you positioned and, as you said earlier, nimble enough to be able to take advantage of it, whichever direction it starts to swing? We don't know yet what will happen and how many teams will try to copy that.
But
there's one thing I've learned about the NFL. It's that the owners are the laziest group of people on the planet. And that if they see, they will do no research. They will spend no time trying to actually figure out why it all worked. They will come up with the simplest solution and just try to emulate that. Oh, you need young people? Well, get me a 28-year-old coach. What are you waiting for? Well, I don't know. Doesn't matter who it is. 28 is the thing. That's the X factor. Go get it.
Mike versus sports owners has been quite a week.
Well,
justifiably.
I don't think I'm wrong on all that. And then, all you need is a super team. Well, it doesn't really work unless you've got this incredible coach who can build a selfless. Stop talking. Just get me a super team. Yep. Okay, well, yeah. And you got to trade all your first round picks. They're worthless. Just go get, proven players. Okay, like that has never worked for anyone else before other than the Rams. So if you're able to completely slide through the needle perfectly, then yes, all of these things can come together and work for the Rams. And that's why, honestly, it does, to answer your question, Brock, no. My long-held beliefs about the NFL are not all going to go away. I honestly think that the Rams are a bit of an exception to prove the rules. Mm-hmm. That they have just found ways, and credit to them.
Yep.
But they've done it with some luck and an incredible amount of just having every right decision. And the NFL is littered with teams that can't do that.
There will be. And there will be here down the road. I'm getting hungry. Are we talking Ascend? Or are we talking?
Oh, would you like to hear a little bit about what's going on beyond the panoramic views on the 31st floor in downtown Bellevue? Ascend Prime Steak and Sushi, dedicated to providing guests with a next level culinary experience, Brock, heightened on the world's best steak. Ascend's hand-selected premium beef selection curated by the culinary team featuring...
Talk to me.
Hit me.
Howdy. You interested?
The world's best steak? Yeah.
Prime American steaks, Angus beef, wet-aged, 28 days from New York strip to filet mignon. Okay. I'm starting New York strip. I can't help it. That's what I do. I go with the strip.
Wet-aged?
Wet-aged. Yes. Huh. Yes. I like my aging wet.
Okay.
Prime dry-aged American steaks as well. Angus beef dry-aged for a minimum, bare minimum. What's the bare minimum you would dry-age a steak?
Well, if it was wet-aged at 28, it's
24
be
hours,
than...
bare minimum, 24
45 hours. Days, bone-in ribeye to the 45-ounce Seahawk chop. Luxury Wagyu Angus crossbreed steaks from outside skirt steak to a cap of ribeye. You got Kurogi Pure Breed A5 Wagyu, prized A5 Wagyu filet mignon, and the cream of the crop. The privilege to serve. Mm-hmm. Miyazaki Prefecture A5 Wagyu. The world's best A5 Wagyu filet mignon. So we're talking about the ultimate, the creme de la creme, the absolute best you can get. Ascend was one of the first restaurants in the whole country to get the Japanese exclusive designated Miyazaki Prefecture A5 regularly available on their menu. That's what we're talking about.
Yes,
that's
sir.
When we're talking about the best of the best. You can make reservations to indulge in the Northwest's elevated steak experience at ascendprime.com. All right, Brock, so with all that discussion of the Rams and the Super Bowl and kind of where the NFL is at, let's bring it back home here now to what the Seahawks need to do and what this offseason starts to look like. How all in do they go? How much are they forcing, building around Russ? And can you go from being the 10th worst team in the league this past year to being in the top, hopefully the top one, but certainly the top 4 to 8 as you head into next year? That's now the goal. So the first step in that, before you get to free agency, before you get to the draft, etc., step one was to fix the coaching staff. They, I think, have done a pretty good job of that. What do you make of what they've done on the coaching staff?
Well, I think back to our conversation of Sean McVay and his fruit that's been born off of his coaching tree and all of the youth and the young aspect of that. I don't think there's any question that when Pete and John met with Jody Allen after the season, that there was going to have to be change made. And I don't know if it was her directive. I think Pete had a lot to say in this, that they needed to get younger. And when you look and when they finally put out the entire list of all of the movement, and it wasn't tweaks, it was significant change on both sides of the ball. You have gotten a much younger mindset. Clint Hurts, 42? He's going to be a first-time coordinator. He's been there. He's presented quite often to the team, as I've come to understand. He's been a very vocal guy. It's not as if he's been just in his D-line cave only coaching his men.
When you say presented to the team, what does that mean?
That means head coaches and smart ones grow their players and grow their coaches from within and put Clint Hurt in front of the team. Put Clint Hurt in front of the defensive group. Put Clint Hurt in front of them just as the head coach has to present. And whether it is some of the scheme, whether it is their fundamentals, whether, it is their core belief of how they play, whether it is on a tell you the truth Monday, that he's up front and gaining that experience to be in up in front of especially the defensive group, Mike. And you have heard stories of Pete doing that with Chris Richard and others, and paid huge dividends for Gus Bradley and Dan Quinn as they become and evolved into head coaches. But, he is young. Sean Desai is young. Carl Scott is young. I mean, defensively, their most prominent voices now are going to be those three, and two of those three under 40, and Hurts 42 and a first-time coordinator. So you have gotten significantly younger on that side. Flip it over offensively. You know, doesn't seem like much of a move, but Mike Solari is moved out, and a younger offensive line coach is moved in right alongside of Shane Waldron, who is still incredibly young guy. So I think that that was some of the imperative coming out of the, you know, those meetings and the direction that they were going to go. And when I saw that on paper at the beginning of the week in totality, it was like, wow. I know a lot of these staffs and jobs in Miami and Minnesota and Denver were young, you know, 40-something, 30-something coaches. Well, outside of Pete Carroll, look at your coordinators and look at your most prominent voices offensively and defensively, and you have certainly got much younger in Seattle.
All right, so younger's fine. What does that mean in terms of actually having a better I think I can kind of understand the offense side. It's funny, because the offense was actually worse than the defense this year. It's where a lot of the focus has been. Mm-hmm. I'm not that worried about it. And I maybe that's nuts, but you got Russell Wilson. Like, you got
the body work the final 4 weeks.
Right, it was really good, right?
I mean, trending in the right direction.
It was, and I think it's fairly easy to make the leaps and say, okay, Shane Waldron looking to kind of they gave him a vote of confidence by letting Mike Solari go, who was from the old regime as the offensive mm-hmm. lineman, bringing in the guy Andy Dickerson, who had been with him in L.A. and was yep. like the assistant to the assistant last year, and you elevate him, and they're all speaking the same language. Like, I understand. That is a very clear vote of confidence and unification under Shane Waldron. That's yes. pretty easy to understand.
Agreed. And Sanjay Lal, by the way, comes back, a guy that had interviewed for coordinator jobs and is a guy that's going to bring a little bit more innovation, hopefully help the one area that was the biggest weakness, which was third downs.
Okay, good.
And bring some of that to the conversation. Well,
not
as
a
well.
Shot. He takes over for Pete's son. Like, Pete had his youngest kid coaching wide receivers, yes. and now they bring in a passing game coordinator with
yep.
NFL experience.
Good.
That's right.
Well, so I think that's fairly easy to kind of grasp and understand, and maybe it'll work, maybe not, but at least I can understand it. The defense is where it gets a little bit trickier, and trying to figure out exactly what they want to do, what they've been doing. We know that they run a 4-3-3-4 principles, right? That's the, mm-hmm. the starting point of it. Now you're bringing in a couple of Vic Fangio guys, 3-4 blitzing defense, right?
Yep.
They've worked together before in Chicago in Desai and Clint Hurt. Clint's obviously been internal. Desai's coming externally. You bring in this, what's his name, Carl Scott,
yep.
who was with Nick Saban and then with Mike Zimmer last year in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that look like? Because that feels, remember, we played the sound last week of Quandre Diggs being like, yeah, it was kind of a mess. There were too many cooks. We had guys moving in the wrong direction. There wasn't enough accountability. I mean, yep. Quandre Diggs tells a story of a defense that was in shambles last mm-hmm. year and only, but for the grace of God, was able to kind of come out of it without giving up more points than they did.
Yep. And I think now, here's a couple things that I know. Was that Peter King that he used to write something mm-hmm. like that?
10 things I know.
I know that defensive line backgrounds, kind of like offensive line background coaches and coordinators, look at protection. They're so focused in their bubble of those five guys, and it's about protection. And that's what we're going to do. And everything in your system expands off of being able first to answer the question of protection. Defensive line minded coordinators are guys that are aggressive, the Ed Orgerons of the world, the sack fumble. We get after the ball. What happens on the back end? Hey, you take care of it. But I'm going to play the Buddy Ryans, the Ryan boys, right? And Clint has been a lifelong defensive line coach. He's going to come at it from more of an attack mode. I think why Desai was important, and that was a competitive deal, and a lot of people wanted him, and he was interviewed in a bunch of spots. I think, Mike, why he is important in this is he ties the back end. He is more simpatico with Pete, forever a secondary coach, a Bill Belichick, a Nick Saban. Those guys, those coordinators, their vision, their optics, their goggles, they're different. It is. Hey, man, we've got to be able to cover this. I'm glad you want to bring nine guys, but who's going to cover? And in this league where you've got to do some of that and you've got to mix and match and disguise coverage and pattern read and jump routes and attack the football, I think that that was a critical, critical hire. Obviously, Hurt was first. I think they believed that they could get the deal done with Desai and connect those two guys, bring them back together, and really marry, you know, that attack mode with what Desai wants to do out of Vic Fangio's program that's a little more quarters, that understands coverage, that understands how to marry aggressiveness without recklessness, if that makes sense. And I think that's where those two get joined at the hip. And then you bring in a Carl Scott that comes from a pretty good background with Nick Saban, would probably lean more into the Desai world of, okay, you want to be aggressive, now we got to cover this up. You want to be aggressive, now we got to pattern read. You want to be aggressive, now we've got to disguise coverage and we got to really confuse a quarterback. And, you know, that's something out of the Saban tree that's very enticing. And again, at 37, from a connectability, a relatability, I think is an important aspect of that,
right,
as well.
So let me ask you this. Let's say you import it. Let's say nothing changed with your personnel for the Seahawks defense, okay? That's not going to happen, but bear with me. And you just did nothing else other than changing out your defensive coaching staff. How big a difference would it make?
It makes a difference.
How big a difference?
I think it can make a big difference.
Are we talking about like worst pressure rate in history type of a difference versus getting to the quarterback and affecting it? Are we talking maybe like a turnover now and again? Are we talking like guys know which position they're supposed to be running to? Defensive ends running 30 yards down the field in coverage? Like, what are we talking about in terms of a difference? Rock?
I think we are talking about what me and Jake Heaps have been clamoring for 3 years, and that is this base defense of playing your base personnel and making freaking, oh gosh, what was that guy's name for the Texans? Backup Matt Schaub throw for 450 yards and actually be a competent player against you instead of harassing, hitting, dictating, aggressive mindset that just got flushed down the toilet the last few years. And I think Ken Norton wanted to play a lot of base. I think he trusted veteran people. Andre Curtis on the back end of it was, hey, man, just keep everything in front of you. Keep everything in front of you. You know, Trey Flowers, it's okay. You can give up 400 yards, but just don't give up big plays. No. We're done with that. We're done with that because that's not Vic Fangio. That is not Nick Saban. And that is not Clint Hurt as far as a defensive line.
Pete's never
going to
get rid of Don't Get Beat Deep. I mean, his free safety is always going to be deeper than deep.
Stay on top will be absolutely. So how all of that is melded and incorporated and talked about and shared language and all that is important. But I would be shocked both from who they target personnel-wise and the moves that they make defensively, how much you further elevate Jordan Brooks. Daryl Taylor gave you enough clay last year. He showed that, man, you could mold me into an attack dog. Carlos Dunlap came alive the second half of the season. Oh, by the way, a couple corners that could play the ball and actually jump around and knock a ball down or, you know, heaven forbid, intercept a pass, right? Like, you can, you know, you can. Hey, guys, psst. Hey, new regime's in town. You know what you can do? You can play the football. You can take it away. Like we used to do that 39 times in 2013. In 2013, we took it away 39 times. So we can attack the football. It's all about the ball. I know it's been all about on top and all about not giving up big plays.
Oh my God.
But we're getting back to taking the football away.
Take your shots, Brock. That's Super Bowl starting cornerback Trey Flowers to you. So put some respect on that name.
Okay. All right. He did. He came in and
Brock
did his job. Yeah. Are you tired of whisper, Brock? I'm sorry.
Well, yes, but that's not what I was going to ask you because all this is great. Most of our audience doesn't really know that much about Sean Desai or Clint Hurt or a lot of these new names. What will this do to first Jamal Adams and second Bobby Wagner? Because those names I do know.
This has to amplify and elevate and excite Jamal Adams. Because now you're going to let me just hopefully be much more aggressive and not be timid and just go and attack as you did in the second half of 2020 as he set sack records and did all of that. So we're not going to mess around. We're not going to play around. We're going to try to put you in the best position for success. I think for Bobby, this has also got to be equally invigorating. I know that Ken Norton was his guy, grew him as a puppy into a dog, did so as a linebacker coach. But I think the last few years, it's been tired. The message has been worn down. And I think if you're Bobby Wagner, you've got new blood. Clint Hurt, you're going to hear him, I think, sooner than later. They're going to, I think, put him in front of the media, and you're going to start to hear from him. And just he's going to be a louder. He's going to be kind of Ken Norton in 2011, 2012, 2013, right? A decade ago, Ken Norton, that was the loud cop when we were at practice, that was the barking dog. I think you're going to hear more of that animation. And I think in Desai and Scott, you got new voices, new eyes, new optics coming in here, pushing, challenging, holding people accountable. And I think there's going to be a part of Bobby that will be excited about that.
Brock, if I didn't know you better, and I know you very well after all these years.
You think you do.
I feel like I know you pretty well. I might have you for a union guy based on your tweet the other night that I couldn't help but notice. What did you say? The owners are so upset that how many of them are selling their teams right now in baseball?
The business is so bad, Mike. The business of baseball is so bad. The Mariners lost $21 million last year. It is so bad, and that is why in bad businesses, hurting businesses, what do you see? You see them put them for sale. Like, I got to get out. I got to cut my losses.
Can't make money here anymore.
Can't make a profit.
Yep. Time to close the doors, Titus. And will ask me occasionally, and we talk some of the supply and demand. We've seen businesses come
and go. You're not getting out of the Titus business, are you?
I'm not getting out of the Titus business. Okay. No. No, I actually had a friend in last night from Iowa.
Invest in that business.
Great guy, a friend in from Iowa, just a terrific young coach, and we took Titus to baseball practice, and it's about, 20-minute drive to the bubble where he works out, and just true to Titus, he asked 20 minutes of questions, so dropped Titus off, and me and Coach go to dinner, and I said, you all right? Did Titus wear you out? He's like, oh my gosh. That is the most inquisitive. He has to get an answer. Like, he just, he's kind of relentless in his question asking. Then, he goes, I loved it.
Then let me ask you a question.
So that was my tweet. My tweet was, for those that don't follow me on Twitter, @BrockHeward, was, man, for the business of baseball being so bad, why aren't owners putting their teams
for sale? All right, so let me attempt to answer it, and then it'll lead to the real question. So if I were an owner, I wish I was, but if I were an owner, my answer to you, I think, would be, well, because we think we can fix the economics here in this CBA agreement.
Yep.
So that's why we're not selling yet. My real question for you is, even if the owners gave up now, right, if they gave in to every demand the players have right now and just said, okay, you win in across the board, how many owners would sell next year?
None.
Still none.
No, absolutely not. Not while it's exploding. No way. None of them sell. It's too good a business. And the numbers have shown that over the last few decades in particular.
I mean, it's not as good as the stock market. So Rob Manfred said, Brock.
That is, honestly, I mean, like, I'm going to do my best. I won't get mad talking about it right now. I'm in a good mood. I feel unburdened after the conversation we had earlier.
Who's the fella in jail that had the big Ponzi scheme? Because he was making 20%.
Bernie Madoff died, right?
Oh, did he die?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
Is that who you're talking about?
That's who I was talking about, yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant the crypto. Oh, sorry, that's not. That's crypto. It's different. No, I would say that is truly... Goodell said some really kind of tasteless things and defended some awful people. I still think that's the worst thing I've ever heard from anyone in power like that.
Yeah.
That is the most tone-deaf, stupid, incorrect... an insulting thing I've ever heard from a commissioner. To say that it was a worse business, that they don't make as much money or increase in value any more than the stock market, and with more risk, is honestly insulting.
Yeah.
Rob Manfred should be embarrassed.
And Stanton could have put his hundreds of millions of dollars into the stock market, and they would be doing better.
Right.
Over the last, when he was a minority owner and now the majority owner, that those dollars would be doing better than his investment in the Mariners.
It's completely ridiculous to think about and just couldn't be farther from the case. And then again, even if it was true, let's say it was true, Okay. Let's for a moment enter this dream world in which Rob Manfred said that, and it's true. Okay. Well, then sell and go get in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
If you're only in baseball to make money and to outperform the market, why are you in baseball? Go do something else.
Yep.
I guess this is the thing that ultimately I don't really understand. And Brock, maybe you have a better business mind than me, so maybe you would understand this. Why do you get into, if you're a billionaire, if you're or a hundreds of millionaire, why do you need to make market style money off of your baseball team or any sports team? Why aren't you in this to win more than anything else and for the love of the game?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that I'm asking you to lose tons of money.
Yeah.
But if you have that much money, what is it that compels you to say that the most important thing here is profit? I just don't get it.
Well, what do you think the percentage of owners across all sports? I have very little feel for the NHL. Pretty good feel for all the 32 owners of the NFL and decent feel for baseball. And we have seen it. We have lived it. We are burned by it here in Seattle with Howard Schultz in particular with the Supersonics and the Supersonics being gone. But Mark Cuban's pretty vocal. Like, of all of the owners across sports, how many of them, Mike, what do you think the percentage is that do what you ask? Hey, man,
it seems very
this is
low.
Civic responsibility. Do all you can do to win.
Well, you got the Packers.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Jerry Jones does. Jerry Jones spends and spends and spends and invests and cares deeply and wants more than anything.
That's true.
Before he sees the end of this earth to win another title.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that he's too far in the other direction, right? That, like, he's so invested that he's actually at times in his own way.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys certainly make money off of it. And that's easy to say when you run the Dallas Cowboys and not the Miami Marlins. So, like, you know, he's got some advantages. Bob Kraft's got some advantages. But yes, there are some guys like that that have certainly seen the benefits and have taken advantage of the kind of sports markets that they live in to invest in the product and make a whole lot. Now, they've made a whole lot more money back out of it. So I don't know what Jerry Jones would say if it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Jerry Jones says if he wasn't making a gazillion dollars of profit off the Cowboys or if Robert Kraft wasn't doing that off the Patriots. Both guys are absolutely interested in winning and have spent to do so.
Yep.
But I don't know what they would say if they weren't making money.
Yep. But, you know, they've run it well enough and invested well enough and built amazing facilities, certainly in Dallas and everything else.
That's a different conversation. That is, if you invest, you can make money. That is different from, I don't care if you make money.
Paul Allen, I think, was a tremendous owner in that way. Now, he had billions and billions and more than even almost, you know, a lot of those owners combined. But I think he took very much that approach.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to lose necessarily money, but I know that this is.
I guess if I were in that position,
Mark Cuban,
I can't put myself there. I can't imagine what it would take to get to be in that Trace Comas level of having $1 billion. So I'm sure that there are so many cutthroat, awful decisions and ridiculous things you've got to do to get there. That, like, you know, once
and
you're
risk,
there,
by the way, that's one side of it.
Risk
there's also
absolutely
unbelievable risk.
I honestly believe that if I were in that spot, I at least I'd like to believe that I would view sports ownership more akin to Andrew Carnegie donating to libraries around the country. That there is such a civic element and so much you can do for the community by investing in the sports teams and the stadiums and all of that and have them bear your name if you have that much money, that the goodwill and grace and love of the community you would receive would actually be worth more to somebody who's already in the billionaire club or the multi-billionaire club than whatever profit is worth to you.
Yeah. I don't know. As I think through this kind of out loud in this exercise, I feel like there's a lot more of that in football, and it maybe is why football is on top. The Hunt family in Kansas City, amazing. The Rooney family in Pittsburgh, amazing. Like, there's the Wilf family in Minnesota, remarkable in that way. Like, I feel for some reason, the Bolin family here in Denver, and that it's going to be sold now to a new owner. I feel like through this exercise, honestly, Mike, that there are many more NFL owners that understand that.
Yeah, but Brock, what happened the last time they had a labor dispute? Hey, we're not making enough money, so we need to change the salary cap situation. Well, that's okay. We're the players. We're willing to talk about that. Why don't you just open up your books, show us what you're losing or what you're not making, and we're happy to have that conversation. Oh, no, you can't say
no,
it.
No, no.
No, you got to trust us. I mean, like, so we can say that there may be some individual
families.
Well,
that doesn't mean they're not keen businessmen when it comes to negotiating.
This is also the same group of people that let Daniel Snyder do what he does, that haven't thrown him out of their club. So I don't know whether I'm going to go quite that far.
I think it's a little different when you're talking what you just did, not the Daniel Snyder stuff. And we'll see what happens there, and we'll see what happens in Miami. I'm talking where you're going here, and I think where the difference is, okay, NFL owners can be ruthless businessmen too, and they're going to win a negotiation with their players, and they're going to do battle with that and compete and get the very best deal they can for their businesses. But when it comes to now their community and their team, and when it comes to investing in their buildings, and when it comes to understanding that, man, the legacy that we have in our communities, the Rooneys, the Hunts, the Allens, the Packers, the Jerry Jones, like there are a lot of them, the Wilfs, that understand that, hey, okay, I'll be ruthless, you know, with my labor. But then when it comes to the bigger brand and when it comes to our communities and our quote-unquote civic responsibilities, I don't know, man. There feels like there's a lot of NFL guys that get it.
You were so ruthless that you were willing to miss football games a couple of years ago. So I don't know that I'm fully buying all that. Let me ask you a different question.
I knew you never would.
You probably won't get me to that.
But when it comes to the baseball side, yikes. I don't feel that. I don't see any loud voice. I don't see any huge owner that has the gravitas that the Krafts and the Rooneys and the Jones, like, who is it? They're all, I don't feel any of that sense. I just feel it is not only we will beat the players, then sorry, fans. Sorry, spring training sites. Sorry. We're going to do in the best interest. Sorry. We're not going to spend in Oakland or in Tampa.
Well,
sorry.
I think what they would tell you, honestly, and I'll take their side for a moment, but really only against the NFL owners, is what I think those baseball owners would tell you is, wait, hold on. All those other guys have a salary cap. They have this built in. They have that built in. They've destroyed their unions over the years so that they are worth nothing. We pay guaranteed salaries in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Yep. We have to carry an entire minor league system. We have a business model that does not have the same level of national interest. No chance. Yeah, cool. I'm glad they get the opportunity to go be civic leaders and all that. This is a different game from that, and we have taken it in the shorts compared to them.
We don't have the guardrails.
Exactly. So I think that's what they would argue back. I don't think it's a very good argument. I think that there's still a lot of reasons that's selfish and on them. But anyway, let me ask you this.
Okay.
So did you read Jason Churchill this week? He was he's our guy from Prospect Insider. He had a series of tweets. I know you love Churchill because you get a chance to see him on the road.
Spotter extraordinaire. I never even knew that.
Did you see his tweet? He said in the past, I'm paraphrasing. He said in the past, he would rank Mariners prospects and give you a rough guess of how many had major league potential. Okay, and he said in the past, some years it's 20, some years 25, 30. Try to rank it to the nearest 5 or 10. Never really more than 40, but somewhere in that 20 to 40 range. Mm. He said he started going through this year, and when he got to 6 dozen, he was like, all right, this is getting ridiculous. There's 70 to 75 guys minimum that have major league potential in this organization. Wow. Now,
yes,
that does not mean that they all make it.
Realize that potential.
That doesn't mean that they're all top-end impact guys or that their impact bats or arms are going to be there with any other team in the league. So he was not trying to make an overall, like, crown them point that this guarantees X, Y, and Z. But when you combine that with the top-end talent they are believed to have, and obviously if you ask me, would you rather hit on 40 of those 70 guys as major leaguers or hit on Kirby and Julio? Like, it's Kirby and Julio, right? Because of just the sheer impact that two guys like that could bring. So I don't want to conflate the two things. But when you start putting both things together, and you start thinking about what else they can do to add and around them and use some of those, let's call them 75 potential major leaguers in trades and to bring in as necessary to fill in. Aren't you talking about a potential real sustainable product here in Seattle that could really work out for the next 5-10 years?
I mean, I don't want to conflate the conversation we had in Des Moines over steak with Churchill, but I basically was like, Churchill, they got waves of players. They got waves, not just one wave. They got waves of players. Did he use waves in his tweet?
He did not.
Article?
I don't think there was anything about waves. Right. I know that's your thing.
I like that word conflate. I just really actually wanted to use the word conflate.
Nice job. Well done.
Yeah. Appropriately used. You nailed it.
But I loved. So for those that don't know, Jason Churchill does spot for Goldie and working this year with Goldie for what, five or six football games? Aaron Goldsmith. Sorry. It was a lot of car time to and from the stadium, to and from the airport.
That's you, Aaron Goldsmith, and Jason Churchill.
Yes.
Rambling through Ames, Iowa.
Oh, we had one dangerous ride. Where was it? We had to get, we had a police escort. It was, I think it was, oh, it was from Bloom. Yeah, I know exactly. I'll paint the picture quickly. It was from Bloomington back to Indianapolis, and we had to catch flight. So I'd say for 17 games, maybe we get three or four police escorts. If a bunch of us have super tight flights, they're nice enough to do that. And so Jason's driving, pretty good driver.
Not a great driver. Apparently.
Not my cured good, but pretty good driver.
Brock pauses for my joke. Okay, thank you. Go on.
Yep. Goldsmith is in the front seat navigating, and I'm in the back, and the stat man.
What? You're in the back? Okay, well, I'm in the back. I'll let you get through this.
Well, I'm in the back with the stat man, Barry Allen, from Montgomery, Alabama, Joe's guy. Sometimes Aaron had his stat guy. Sometimes it was Joe's guy. And Barry's a big man now. Barry's tipping 400 pounds. He's a big boy. And we had the monster SUV, the big, oh gosh, Nissan Armada or whatever it is. It's like a tank. And Jason had never had to follow a police escort. And
pressure's on.
Pressure's on.
Better keep up.
And it was windy roads. And Barry's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Two or three times, I think Barry tinkled in the back seat, whoa, 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 whoa. And I think Goldsmith said, man, this is crazy. And Barry's like, I like it to be a little less crazy back here. So,
is he Tom Moore?
Pretty much.
Kind of what I'm imagining.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
By my bootstrap.
Yeah, pretty stinking close. So, but anywho, on most of those rides, unless we had a police escort, there's a lot of Mariner baseball talk. And he would say that, you know, and talk about the biggest difference, Mike, to land this long story back on the track is they've got waves and waves and waves of players.
Yeah.
And they have never had that. At least through the Zurenzik years and building this. And that really wasn't the regime before Zurenzik. Does that allow you then to
just wait for him, though? I mean, I think that's the last part of this is you saved and I can't get over this thing. You saved so much money on Cano, right?
Yep.
If you didn't get Jared Kelnick in that deal, if all you did was trade Edwin Diaz and Robbie Cano for nothing, just to get rid of the Cano salary, especially given that Diaz has done nada since going to the Mets, it would have been a good trade in and of itself. But if you're Jerry DePoto, you've got to be going back, right? And saying, all right, man, I saved you all that money. Now I need it. Like, yeah, the waves are coming. Yes, they're going to be here, but I'll say this definitively. Today's Mariners roster, not the opening day roster, today's Mariner roster is not a playoff team.
I agree.
It's not.
And our buddy from Zips, who spoke like a computer.
Oh, Dan Szymborski? Yeah, it's not a playoff team.
Nope.
That doesn't mean you can't get to
it. Not in your division, by the way. Not in your division, not in the American League.
Right. So this idea of, yeah, you've got waves and you've got impact guys coming, that's great. And that may sustain a tremendous amount of success starting a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. I don't know when all of that really gets going. It depends which guys truly hit the way you hope they do. But there's no reason to wait, right? I mean, like, and I don't think I'm saying anything new. This is not like nobody's thought of this before. Everyone around town is having the same conversation. As soon as this CBA gets done, go spend some money or make a deal or whatever. But the fact of the matter is you don't have a playoff roster right now. And for all of the excitement, unless you want to disappoint every single Mariner fan out there who is expecting this to build on last year, you got to go. You cannot disappoint that group right now. And there's no reason to. There's no downside to building more for the future. There's no money. You've saved the money.
Mm-hmm.
You've saved the payroll. Now go spend it.
Yep.
Everyone who's defended you for going through the rebuild, they defended you because the other shoe is supposed to drop.
I wouldn't even use the word defended. I don't believe I defended the Mariners during the rebuild. I specifically encouraged them to do this. I applauded it with both hands. It's hard to applaud without both. I applauded them with one hand. It was very quiet. No, I mean, like, I wanted this rebuild. I wanted them to do this, and quite frankly, wanted them to do it earlier than they did. I love it. I support. I don't just defend it. I support it. I would have done it. I loved it.
But
it is built on the principle that once you have saved the money and you've got the guys and you've built the system, you finish the job.
You go for it.
You go big. You don't go back to normal. No, you go big.
I will say, I don't need them to sign like four guys right now if they don't think they're the right guys. I want to be fair. If they look at it and say, you know what? Chris Bryant's not that good. We don't believe it. And I think you can make a case that neither Chris Bryant nor Trevor Story is that good. I'd still probably sign one of them. It's just money. Whatever. Cut that guy later.
You like, can find a way money. To get out of that money.
Yeah, find a way later. But like, okay, I don't need you to go sign a bunch of guys that you don't actually like, that you don't think has the right capabilities, talents, or even personality to help build what you're trying to build. If you want to spend a little of it now and some more of it at the deadline and some more of it next year and even more, like, okay, like I'm patient. But don't tell me that right now you think you've got a playoff team. You don't. So you got to go. And not that they're trying to say that. I've not heard that from anybody. So this is not like there's no straw man that I'm arguing against here. Just trying to build the momentum for you're not done yet. Let's go finish the job. And then let's see where we're at.
Yep.
I think it'd be pretty fun. So
I like it.
Not that there's going to be a baseball season to worry about, but anyway, in case there's going to be maybe some
all right,
down
let's
the road.
Wrap it up.
All right. Yep, we better get out of here.
Land the plane.
On that wonderful high note, thank you, Brock. This was a lot of fun. I feel unburdened.
Good.
Thank you, Howdy, for the new open. I really feel
Howdy,
loved.
Can you put the new
respected.
Open at the close of this as
That's
well?
That's really unnecessary. I'll be taking off my headphones, and I will simply tell you that the hay
is in the box.
See everybody.
This is the chopper!